May's KCSB Reads Book of the Month is White Trash, the 400-year-old untold history of class in America. The book talks about the ways in which class affects white voters, especially how it played out during the 2016 election. KCSB's Kendra Lee has more on the story.
This month's KCSB Reads Book of the Month is called White Trash, the 400-year-old untold history of class in America by Nancy Eisenberg. She details the history and creation of class in America and starts off her book by talking about how the British saw America as a wasteland where they sent people they didn't want, the undesirables, the criminals, the poor people. She then goes on to talk about poor whites in the 19th century, saying that class was congenital at this time. One of the major themes in this book is the idea of fictitious class mobility. I spoke with Nancy Eisenberg to find out more about her book. She starts off by talking about how the middle class was not created until after World War II.
Yeah, I mean, when we think about having a stable middle class, a middle class where parents expected their children to do better than themselves, that's really a very recent invention. The middle class was a very small portion of the population earlier in American society, and it had to do with the growth of American industry, as well as the active support of unions, in addition to the idea that the federal government played a very important role in making it possible through the GI Bill for people to get a college education. And they made it possible not only for white collar middle class, you know, men to buy a home, but for the working class to be able to buy a home in suburbia. So we have to realize that that idea of the middle class is something that was very much shaped by the government. And at the same time that I highlight when I talk about the rise of suburbia, what emerged at the exact same time? There was a lot of hostility among people who lived in suburban communities to target what were the new undesirables, and they were, of course, trailer trash. And as you can guess, trailer trash is building on white trash, and it also fits onto one of the other dominant themes of my book, is that the poor, and this comes from the English, are often associated with being vagrants, people who are on the move, people who do not put down roots and own property. And that's really why the trailer becomes a symbol of white poverty, because, again, it's a house on wheels. And this kind of conjures all those old notions of the fear of vagrancy. So, yes, what I try to do in my book is I look at how class becomes politicized. It's central to the fear of squatters and crackers during the period of manifest destiny and Western migration. It's central to the Civil War. It's central to the politics of Reconstruction, as well as the eugenics movement. And then, of course, it also emerges as being crucial to understanding the New Deal, because they're the targeted group that the government reached out and tried to reform were poor tenant farmers and sharecroppers. But then even at the moment when America is at its peak in terms of having a stable middle class, these old ideas still do not disappear. They still become a part of American culture. And that's what I try to show, why we're still trapped in this language. Because one of the statistics I like to highlight is that a sociologist, a really important study done by sociologists in 2015 showed that the most key variable to determine whether you're going to be successful in this country, and that means become part of the upper middle class, the key variable is the wealth and privilege you inherit from your parents and then even from your ancestors. So we still, and that's a form of class we never think about. We think, oh, well, of course parents are going to take care of their children. But that's how class is still transferred to lineage, pedigree, and inheritance, those old ideas. And this is even reinforced more by sociologists who found that middle class and upper middle class parents invest almost 50% of their wealth in their children. And why are they doing that? Because they want their children to reproduce their class position, if not improve it.
That constant debate over whether race or class has a larger impact on people's ability to succeed, and the theme of your book talks primarily about class and not necessarily race.
I do talk about race.
Yeah.
I talk about the importance of slavery in the colonial period. And one of the key people of the colonial period who later influenced Franklin and Jefferson was a man, James Oglethorpe, who established Georgia, wanted to keep slavery out of Georgia, in part because he realized that creating a slave-owning planter elite not only oppressed slaves, mm-hmm. but it oppressed poor white men who couldn't compete because they wouldn't have access to the land. And Southern politics and Reconstruction, this is one thing that people miss, is that the Union and Republican ways of looking at how were they going to reconstruct the South, they actually measured it as a kind of competition. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be the, you know, the free slaves versus the poor whites? Who's going to get educated, get a job, and improve themselves first? And believe it or not, they believed that freed slaves were making much better progress than poor whites. So race and class do intersect, and I highlight that throughout my book. And that's one of the things that I want to stress. It's not that it's one or the other. In fact, if you look at the condition of poor blacks in this country, they are suffering from race and class oppression. And this is why we have to understand that those two things are important, and we have to look at them together and not assume that one variable trumps another variable.
That idea that kind of perpetuates the racism is that when slavery was taking away jobs from poor lower class white people, then those poor lower class white people were upset with slaves. So it just kind of perpetuated that racism, that hatred towards black people.
I mean, the irony is that in the planter South, elite planters valued their slaves more than they did poor whites because they saw poor whites as unproductive parasites. That's when you find this really horrible language where poor whites are referred to as clay eaters. They're very much seen as this inferior breed of Anglo-Saxons. So this is what we have to understand, is the class, we have to put back into the equation the role of elites, and not just the 1%. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have to realize that the middle class itself, and I deal with this throughout my book, often has to work hard to distinguish itself from the working class and the lower class. And therefore, they have to look down on those beneath them. And that's why we have the slur of the nouveau riche. And I highlight that in the context of people like Dolly Parton and Tammy Faye Baker, the way in which these women were overcompensating for being poor and not having the privileges that were associated with elite womanhood. And as a scholar refers to excessive womanliness, with Dolly Parton with her big hair and her large breasts, and Tammy Faye Baker with her excessive makeup, that these are sort of signs. And then they're, of course, dismissed by the middle class because they're seen as women who don't adhere to the standards of middle class propriety. You know, they're loud, they're obnoxious, or they're seen as sexually, you know, perverse in the case of Dolly Parton. So this is kind of the legacy. When we talk about class, not only does it include race, it also includes gender. Class is also defined and has always been defined through gender, if we think about breeding and reproduction. And that in the eugenics movement, the group that was most targeted for sterilization were poor white women.
There's so much that I learned from reading this book and just in the title of your book, The Untold History of Class in the United States. So this historical perspective you bring, it's not what people learn in the classroom growing up, or it's not stuff you just hear about growing up. And so why do you think that is?
Well, there's several reasons for that. I mean, one, we don't do a very good job of teaching history in this country. I mean, I even know when I was growing up, the history was taught in a more sophisticated way than it's taught now. Most children in public schools, maybe they'll get like a year of American history, if that. On top of that, grade school, and this is what we see in popular culture, what we often teach are the myths, not the reality. So yes, children do know about Pocahontas. Disney makes a film about Pocahontas. So the kind of very simple stories, and this is often what people's history is about. It's just reaffirming why we're great, why we're different from Great Britain, you know, why we're the land of opportunity, you know, the whole myth of the pioneer. When I talk about how the first poor whites who moved west were called squatters and crackers, just paying attention to the language that was used in the past mm-hmm. shows that the terms we use, we often cover up the unpleasant parts of our history because it's used mainly as a vehicle to inspire patriotism rather than actually to educate people to understand how the past informs our present. And even, you know, even very popular, intelligent people often do not like to admit that we have class differences, that we don't have, all of us do not start in the same place, that inequality is much more widespread and has been throughout history. Because, in fact, it makes us really uncomfortable. The same way it makes us uncomfortable to talk about racial discrimination, it makes us extremely uncomfortable to talk about class privilege. Because that means everyone who has that privilege has to pay attention to it and realize that they didn't do it on their own and they didn't pull themselves up by the bootstraps and they just didn't work hard to get ahead.
Well, great. Thank you so much for this interview. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I think we've covered everything. I mean, one of the things that I will just add this is that in the paperback edition, I do have a new preface which talks about the way class was used during the election year and around Trump to give people sort of more food for thought and why I'm writing what I write about in this book does reemerge as recent as the last election, and not in some simple way. It's not just class versus identity politics. In fact, it has the various layers, the various themes that I talk about in the book played out in the way class politics was used by the candidates and also influenced commentators and journalists and people looking at the election and getting confused by it and not being able to make a sense of the politics.
Reporting for KCSB, I'm Kendra Lee.